Anyone who uses the ocean without the protection of at least a stand-up paddleboard or boat is risking shark attack. And we like to be in denial about it. And just when I was in the sea the other day and a little eight-year-old girl's going, are there sharks here? I'm like, no, no. The park beach? No, never. Because I'm just lying to make it feel safe. But can any of those personal shark attack preventions make a difference? Professor Corey Bradshaw at Matthew Flinders Professor of Global Ecology has been doing some work on this that I thought would be pretty interesting to you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you've looked at the electronic shark devices. What are they and how do they work, first of all?
Yeah, well, so there's several versions. Some of them you can stick on the back of your tanks if you're a diver, or you can stick on your surfboard if you're a surfer, or you can wear them around your torso if you're a swimmer. Or you can have ones that are based off the back of your boat. But what they do is they send out an electrical field in the water that disrupts one of the senses of a shark, and that's its electric sensory perception. So sharks tend to follow their prey or find prey based on a whole suite of senses. So the first one they probably use is sound from a farther distance. As they get a bit closer, they might smell something in the water. And then as they get a bit closer, they might see what potentially could be food. And then when they decide to go for a little bit of a nibble, they'll use their electrical perception to define where that animal is in the water. And so if you can add a little bit of an electric current into the mix, you might just sort of persuade them not to take that bite. It's kind of like a bit of, you know, hot sauce on the spoon sort of thing.
Yeah, as someone who swims in the ocean, I want to find it funny, but it's just making me feel like wetting my pants. So in terms of that study, how have you looked at whether it's effective or not?
Right, so this goes back actually to 2018. My colleagues and I did some experiments where we looked at different types of deterrents, and some of them were magnetic fields, some of them were electronic devices that put out the electric field, some of them were stinky wax that claimed that they would deter a shark. You know, they actually do have, you know, chilies in them and things like that.
Yeah, wow. And, oh, so you do coat yourself in hot sauce. That seems counterintuitive.
Turns out that actually doesn't work. But we obviously couldn't, you know, throw a bunch of people in the pool and then turn off and on different devices and see if sharks bit them because, you know, we don't live in a certain country in Europe in the 1940s. So we had to come up with an experimental design that would mimic the situation. But of course, you know, we're burying the sharks in, so you've already got a higher density of sharks around, and then we put a piece of bait on hanging from a surfboard with these different things on. Since that time, we've done other species. This was on white sharks. We've done other species as well. The experimental conditions are close to as realistic as possible, but we're probably still underestimating the efficacy. But what we've done in this latest study is actually tried to predict in the future how many people could avoid being bitten if they put the equipment on that actually works. And then we take account, you know, climate variation and increasing population size, and, you know, number of people in the ocean, that sort of thing.
So, Professor, before you reveal that figure, because, you know, suspense is just so exciting at 20 past 9, because shark attacks are going up.
Yes and
no. Is that what you're seeing, that there's an increasing trend? Is that because more of us are in the water?
Well, look, there's yes and no, because if you actually look at since the 1990s, the total number of bites has gone up. And this last year has actually been pretty bad. But if you go back and look at sort of longer time series, back to the 1930s, they were actually higher. So it comes in these cycles.
Okay.
And the other thing, too, is, a lot more people are in the water, so the bite rate hasn't changed a lot.
All right. So here we are. We just wanted to establish our baseline. How many lives could be saved if people wore the electronic personal shark protection devices?
Thousands. Thousands. So, you know, up to, say, even 3,000, depending on sort of some of the assumptions we make. But that's over the next 50-odd years.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's not. Look, the other thing, too, is that despite the desire to wet your pants, it is extremely low probability to get bitten. It always has been and always will be. It's just, it's a fear that we inflate because of our fear of large predators. And you know, it's tragic when someone does get bitten or dies from a bite. But at the end of the day, you're still more likely to die driving to the beach.
Have you looked at the wetsuits? You know, there's the black and white ones, the zebra wetsuits, there's the camouflage ones. How do they rate?
Well, we haven't tested those, as far as I know, from this kind of perspective. But I've got a student right now actually working on a wetsuit material that resists bites. So it's actually something does bite you, and it's kind of like wearing Kevlar. In fact, a lot of these are variants on a Kevlar kind of idea. And we're doing tests in the lab, as well as actually sticking out bits of meat that are wrapped in this wetsuit material, and then looking at the puncture wounds and trying to establish how much that would mean in terms of a real wound. We're also trying to get cadavers and pig pads, but we'll see how that goes.
Pretty fascinating stuff. I mean, as an area to look in, do you love this because you get to hang bits of bait off surfboards?
Well, I'm more the mathematician in the group, so I'm not the sort of the cowboy on the ocean. That's my students and my colleagues tend to do that a bit more, but I'm going to get out there eventually.
You send them out for the wet work and the meat.
Yeah. I used to do a lot of bit of work out on Ningaloo, but not with white sharks. We were diving with whale sharks and hammerheads and tigers and things like that. But turns out, you know, actually tigers are responsible for the most deaths in Australia.
Oh, okay, because we always sort of blame the white shark, don't we, because we've all watched Jaws. So with these electronic beacons, what are you noticing from species to species of shark? Are there differences in behaviour?
Yeah, well, sharks are as varied and wonderful as, you know, dogs. You know, you get your chihuahuas to your wolfhounds, you know. And
all right, you're nearly making me like them now. Steady on.
But you get all sorts of different behaviors. You get schooling behaviors. You get individual there's ambush predators. There are, you know, chasing predators. All sorts of things. So every species is going to be slightly different. But so far, I think the three species have been tested now, and they seem to work roughly at the same rate. So we're probably approaching that again. That 60% probability reduction in bite rate. Yeah.
24 past 9. You're listening to Professor Corey Bradshaw at the Matthew Flinders, who's the Matthew Flinders Professor of Global Ecology. Is this work funded by manufacturers of these? Because Craig is saying, you know, some of these electronic shark repellents, they say they work. There's a whole industry, and they say they work on mice and possums and snakes and birds. You know, there's the beepers we put on to stop kangaroos bumping into them. So where's your funding from, of course, the key question. And how do we tell the difference between one that works and one that doesn't?
Well, this comes down to the consumer actually doing a bit of the research, because there are a lot of claims out there. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit that we did receive some money from some companies, but most of the money's actually come from government. But they had nothing to do with the design or anything, or the analysis or anything like that. Yeah. I've never received a cent myself from anyone.
Yeah, yeah, cool. I mean, even if you had, that's not really like
no. Look, you have
all of the answer. But how do we tell the difference as a consumer?
Well, you have to listen to radio interviews with people like me, and you have to actually, unfortunately, dip into the literature. You know, there are government incentives now in a lot of states that are tied to particular devices that have been tested. So if you see a subsidy out there that your government's offering, it's a good chance that that's actually been based in real research, because the government doesn't kick up cash for nothing. But there are a lot of
this is the Australian government you're talking about, but it could be a good sign.
No, I'm talking state governments actually.
Okay,
I don't think there's any Commonwealth program yet. If that's unlikely,
all right.
In my view.
We do tend to trust our state governments a bit more. Yeah,
yeah. So we have one in South Australia. There's one in New South Wales, and I think there's one in WA as well.
All right. Well, that's a way to have a look at it. And Craig, just make sure you do your research. Professor Corey Bradshaw, great to talk to you today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.